Wednesday, December 29th, 2021. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope your week is going well. I hope that your holiday went well, whatever it is that you may celebrate. I hope you and your family and your friends are all staying healthy out there. I hope that you had a very Merry Christmas, a very happy Hanukkah, a very Merry Kwanzaa. I hope Santa Claus or whoever was really, really good to you and you had a great holiday. We are happy to be back again this week. We are happy to have you here with us today. And I know that we have had some COVID weirdness as of late, but we still have had some really fun bowl games taking place in college football lately. I mean, Central Florida beat up big brother Florida in the Gasparilla Bowl. That was pretty fun. Army scored a last-second field goal over Missouri to win the Armed Forces Bowl. But now we're starting to get a little more serious here, because now the real bowl games are about to get cranked up. Of course, we have some bowl games tonight, but Oregon versus Oklahoma in the Alamo Bowl might prove to be very interesting. I mean, both programs now have brand new head coaches, have a lot of kind of weird feelings going on around those programs. Is this going to be good? Is this going to be better? Is this going to be a step back? And then on Friday night, we get the big dogs. Yes, we had Christmas. We're about to have New Year's, but we are about to have two college football playoff games. And first up, we get the Cotton Bowl, where number four Cincinnati, who, by the way, will be the first non-Power 5 team to make the college football playoff, will be going against the Blue Blood. They will be going against the number one Alabama Crimson Tide on Friday. Can the Bearcats even make this competitive? Can they even stay close? Can they even make this game interesting? Well, history says no, because we know so many of these first round games are actually blowouts. That's what they've been historically. But I will say this, I actually expect this Cincinnati defense to hold up at least for a little while. Now, if the Bearcats offense can't maintain some drives at some point during this game, then I think the defense is going to wear out for Cincinnati. But I think they'll keep it close for a while. And I never like to underestimate the fact that a team practices for about a month, being told every day, all the time, you can't compete in your bowl game, because we have seen sometimes that does prove as a source of motivation to get a team more and more focused. I think Cincinnati keeps it close for a while. I think in the end, Alabama takes over. Then in the second game on Friday night, we will see the Orange Bowl, where number two Michigan and number three Georgia will be the main event. And I am really hoping that this is going to be a close, fun game. Again, historically, these first round games are usually blowouts, but this game could be interesting. Now, here is my concern that I have in this game. I have two concerns, and they are both for the Michigan Wolverines. First off, head coach Jim Harbaugh, he has been notoriously bad against top competition. I know he finally beat Ohio State this year, and everybody is jumping in on the Wolverines. And I mean, good for him. You finally get that monkey off your back. But remember, Harbaugh's record is just 3-13 against top 10 teams. I realize that Georgia is coming off of that loss to Alabama in the SEC title game, but make no mistake, Georgia is definitely a top 10 team. That does not bode well for Michigan. I mean, Georgia coach Kirby Smart, he has been way better against top teams. The problem for Kirby is that he just can't seem to beat Nick Saban. Here is my other concern for Michigan in the Orange Bowl. Michigan is a team that uses the run to set up the pass. That is going to be very, very tough to do against that Georgia defensive front. Georgia allows just 82 yards per game on the ground. For that reason, I will take the Georgia Bulldogs to beat Michigan, but I mean, let's hope it's a close game. Let's hope it's an entertaining game. I would love to see both of these games be tight and interesting. There is a chance, though, we could be seeing an all-SEC national championship game and a rematch of the SEC championship game on Monday, January 10th, for the national championship itself. Of course, we will be recapping these bowl games next week on The Dose, and this Friday night, New Year's Eve, should be really, really fun. Hey, if you'd like to contact the show, Maybe tell us who you are picking in the college football playoff games. We would love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, dailydosports@gmail.com, or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. Maybe you've got a question. Maybe you've got a comment. Maybe you don't like the picks that I just made. Hey, reach out to us. We would love to hear what you have to say. Also, make sure you stop by DailyDoseSports.com each week and check out some of the new articles going up there. I'm releasing a Daily Doses on Tuesday. It's a very, very quick read. Usually it has a little bit more of a local slant, but you got to make sure you stop by and check out Daily Doses. And then Young Jimmy is posting a new article on Thursday. You didn't see his article this last week. He talked a little bit about high school recruit Travis Henry going to Jackson State over Florida State. Some very interesting stuff that Young Jimmy is posting over there as well. So be sure that you're stopping by DailyDoseSports.com each week. Plus, you know you can always find the video portion of the podcast from YouTube. You know you can always find a link to the podcast. And there's a lot of information over there that you might not have known. Plus, you can find a link to that Daily Dose gear. And I know that right now, you're looking around and you're saying, hey, the holidays are over. I don't have any shopping to do. And yet, you know there's that one person on your list that you haven't bought anything for. What better way to let someone know that you care about them than by ordering them some Daily Dose gear? Make sure you stop by tpublic.com and pick up that Daily Dose gear. We've got a couple of designs over there to choose from. Got a Daily Dose football logo, Daily Dose basketball logo, just our standard Daily Dose logo. You can get a t-shirt, a sweatshirt, a hoodie in whatever color that you would like. So be sure you stop by tpublic.com, search Daily Dose, and you will find exactly what you need. Hey, today on the show, the year 2021 is going to end on Friday night. And you know, we actually have a tradition here at the Dose. We look back at some very special people on our final show of the year, going to be doing that today. Plus, we will have a Daily Dose Top 5 for you that is looking back at some of the ways 2021 could have actually been a little bit different. But first, we do have a little bit of sports news for you. And let's start off with some actual good news. I know that in this time, that seems to be really, really rare, right? That we actually get some good news for a change. But we just might be getting exactly that. And yes, it does pertain to sports. Eventually. Because the Center for Disease Control is finally taking steps towards some common sense. What? I know that sounds crazy, but it seems to be true. It was reported on Monday that the CDC is shortening the isolation period for those who test positive for COVID from 10 days to 5 days. The CDC notes the change is motivated by science showing that transmission is taking place in the early stages of the illness. Here was the statement that they released. Given what we know about COVID-19 and the Omicron variant, the CDC is shortening the recommended time for isolation from 10 days for people with COVID-19 to 5 days if asymptomatic, followed by just 5 days of wearing a mask when around others. Yeah, that's a big difference from what they're doing right now. That's half. That's less. Well, as we are seeing in the NFL, in the NCAA, and goodness, bowl games are really taking a hit, in the NBA, in the NHL, even in high school sports, they are all getting blasted right now by COVID-19 outbreaks. Well, this new recommendation from the CDC could lead to protocols loosening up even more. Because the leagues are often led by what the CDC says, this could be tremendous news. You know, under the NFL's current COVID-19 protocols, unvaccinated players who test positive have to quarantine for 10 days. That is insane considering the fact that most of these players don't have any symptoms whatsoever. Bowl games are being canceled left and right because the protocols are so strict. This change could lead leagues to start applying a little more common sense to the situation. Hey, it isn't exactly what we asked Santa Claus for last week when we said, hey, could we please just let asymptomatic players that have been vaccinated just not get tested anymore? It's not quite there, but at least it's a step in the right direction because this variant seems to be far less deadly. In fact, many people have zero symptoms. They don't even know they have it. So let's treat it as much less dangerous because it seems to be. I know that common sense has been pushed out the window over the past 2 years, but this is at least a little bit encouraging. Moving over to the NFL, where it was announced that the New York Giants are actually planning to bring back head coach Joe Judge and quarterback Daniel Jones for next season. The Giants say they believe both Judge and Jones deserve the opportunity to demonstrate their talents one more time next season, even though we know the Giants have already been eliminated from the playoffs. They have already clinched a fifth consecutive season with double-digit losses. And the Giants said they're still expecting to have difficult conversations with a number of members within the organization, but that they are going to be bringing back Joe Judge and Daniel Jones. And I know that the media is kind of putting this out there, and everybody is kind of saying the same thing. Man, the Giants are so stupid. What in the world are they doing? Well, I mean, there are a few lines of thinking here. One, I know that we look at Daniel Jones and sometimes we look at these young quarterbacks and we just go, oh, bust. He's terrible. He's no good. Why'd they ever draft him? But I mean, this is a big, strong kid that has shown at times he's capable of doing some good things. And I understand he's been bad, but he's had no help whatsoever. He could end up becoming a player. I'm not sure that you deal him. But there is also thinking within that organization that any move the Giants are going to do this offseason is actually going to involve general manager Dave Gettleman, who could, they say, decide to step down after his now fourth season with the team. Well, if he does, well, then you're looking at bringing in a new general manager who is going to have his own thoughts on coaching staff and player personnel and the entire roster. So the Giants might not pull the trigger on their coach or even their quarterback, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're not going to make a move. They're just going to try to get everyone in place in the front office to know what move they want to make. And I mean, here locally in Denver, it's kind of that same bad news for Denver Broncos fans, because we could be looking at the exact same situation. Until Denver's ownership situation is shored up, how do you go out and fire and hire when a new owner is probably going to come in and say, no, 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 I want this person. I want that person. Wait, why did you fire them? You're not the boss. Get out of here. You might be risking your own neck if you go out there hiring and firing yourself. I know that a lot of people here in Denver are looking at this situation like, hey, we're going to fire head coach Vic Fangio the first second that we possibly can. But wait a second. If ownership is about to change, you're kind of putting your neck out there if you go fire the wrong person, or especially if you go hire the wrong person, because your owner might not want that person. It's a big risk to take. You might be next on the chopping block if you make the wrong move. Okay, coming back. You know, for the past few years here at The Dose, on our last show of the year, we have started to look back at some of the people that we have lost over the past year. And I'm telling you right now, we have quite a collection of sports talent that we lost in 2021. So, you know, we started doing this a few years ago on The Dose, just taking a look back at some of the sports figures that we lost over the past year. Now, before you say to yourself, isn't this going to be like the saddest show ever? No, it's not really that. This truly isn't like a show of mourning. Honestly, it is really just more informational. Some of the names that I'm going to read right now, you're going to be like, wait, we lost that person? I literally had no idea. Well, when the news is busy trying to come up with new ways to scare us every day, they sometimes miss some very noteworthy people. And I mean, let's be honest, right now in this era, unless these people actually died of COVID, the media doesn't even mention it. And by the media, of course, I mean ESPN. So right now, on our final show of the year 2021, let's take a look back at some of the biggest sports figures that we have lost over the past year. And you know, last year on New Year's Day, we lost probably my first favorite football player ever when we lost former running back Floyd Little. You know, Little was a three-time All-American at Syracuse University, and in 1967, he was the sixth selection of the 67 NFL AFL draft. It was actually the first common draft that combined the two. He was the first-round pick to ever sign with the Denver Broncos, because a lot of guys got picked by the Denver Broncos. You might not realize it, but the Denver Broncos picked a lot of really good players, you know, like Dick Butkus, Merlin Olsen, but they never ended up signing with Denver. They went to the NFL instead. Well, Floyd Little said he didn't know any better, so he just signed. He was actually known in Denver as the franchise. Little was elected to the College Football Hall of Fame in 1983 and to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2010. You know, John Elway took the Denver Broncos to championship heights. Make no mistake about that. But there is no Denver Broncos without Floyd Little. The team was actually looking to move to Birmingham until Little signed with the club and became a superstar. And he was one of the favorite Broncos in team history. I mean, dude went out and went door to door and actually drummed up fans and drummed up money to save the team back in the day. There isn't anybody who would or could do that, but Little did it and he saved the Denver Broncos franchise. Now, I'll tell you personally, as a little kid, back in my day, you couldn't go out and buy a pro sports jersey. That wasn't a thing. They didn't make them yet. But I did make my mom take my white sweatshirt and iron on a number 44 in honor of Floyd. He was the first favorite player that I ever had. Back on January 2nd, we lost NBA player and coach Paul Westphal. You know, Westphal played in the National Basketball Association from 1972 until 1984, playing the guard position. He won an NBA championship with the Boston Celtics in 1974. Westphal played in the NBA Finals again in 76 as a member of the Phoenix Suns. His NBA career also included stints with the Seattle Supersonics and the New York Knicks. In addition to being a five-time All-Star selection, Westphal actually earned three All-NBA first-team selections and one second-team honor. Now, after his playing career ended, Paul Westphal coached for Southwestern Baptist Bible College, which is now Arizona Christian University. He also coached at Grand Canyon University and Pepperdine University. Then he served as the head coach of the Phoenix Suns, the Seattle Supersonics, and the Sacramento Kings in the NBA. Westphal actually coached the Suns to those NBA Finals in 1993 with Charles Barkley. In 2019, Paul Westphal was inducted into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. On January 4th, we lost John Muckler, who was a professional hockey coach and executive. He actually last served as the general manager of the Ottawa Senators in the NHL. Muckler had over 50 years of professional hockey experience as part owner, general manager, and director of player personnel. He was a director of hockey operations. He was a head coach. He was an assistant coach. He was a player. John Muckler had been a part of five Stanley Cup championships in different roles. You know, we lost one of the great personalities in all of sports on January 7th when we lost Major League Baseball great Tommy Lasorda. Lasorda played for the Dodgers in 54 and 55 and for the Kansas City Athletics in 56. He was a coach for the Dodgers from 73 until 76 and then would eventually take over as the manager. Lasorda won two World Series championships as manager of the Dodgers. He was named Manager of the Year in the National League two times, and his uniform number two was retired by the Dodgers franchise. He was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in his first year of eligibility in 1997. And you know, I will always remember a few things about Tommy Lasorda, and one of them was his hatred for baseball mascots. Because if you don't remember, Tommy Lasorda beat up the Philly Fanatic. He almost killed the San Diego Chicken. I'm sure you can find those clips on YouTube. For some reason, Tommy did not like mascots, but Tommy Lasorda was absolutely one of a kind. Staying in baseball, on January 19th, we lost a phenomenal Major League pitcher when Don Sutton passed away. Sutton played in Major League Baseball for 23 seasons as a member of the Los Angeles Dodgers, Houston Astros, Milwaukee Brewers, Oakland Athletics, and California Angels. Sutton won a total of 324 games, and he pitched 58 shutouts, including 5 one-hitters and 10 two-hitters. He is 7th on baseball's all-time strikeout list with 3,574. After a year in the minor leagues, Sutton joined the Dodgers beginning in 66. He was the team's starting pitcher in the rotation with Sandy Koufax, Don Drysdale, and Claude Osteen. Good luck facing that lineup. 16 of Sutton's 23 Major League Baseball seasons were spent with the Dodgers. He registered just one 20-win season, but he earned 10 or more wins in every season except for two. Sutton became a television sports broadcaster after his retirement as a player. He worked in that capacity for several years. The majority of those were actually spent with the Atlanta Braves. Don Sutton was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1998. On January 15th, we had the tragic passing of NFL wide receiver Vincent Jackson at the age of just 38. Jackson was a Colorado Springs kid, actually, if you didn't know that. He went to Widefield High School down in the Springs, and then he went to the University of Northern Colorado in Greeley. But at 6'5 and 230 pounds, Vincent Jackson was just so big and strong. He played 12 seasons in the NFL with the San Diego Chargers and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Jackson was a three-time Pro Bowler that caught 57 touchdowns in his career. On January 21st, we lost a very good college basketball coach when longtime Temple coach John Chaney passed away. Chaney's first collegiate position was actually at a Division II school by the name of Chaney State, where he coached the Chaney Wolves to a 232-56 record. Chaney won the 1978 NCAA Division II men's basketball tournament. And then in 1982, he took over at Temple in Philadelphia, where he had actually grown up. You know, John Chaney, he was a tough coach. He demanded excellence on and off the court. He actually made you be a student. And he was well known for his early morning practices, his matchup zone defenses, and his tough non-conference scheduling. He was fearless when he put together a schedule. I will still always remember John Chaney going into John Calipari's press conference and telling him he was going to whoop his behind. Chaney was a tough dude that taught his kids toughness and discipline, and I'm telling you, we need more John Chaneys in this world. On January 22nd, we lost one of the greatest MLB players of all time, and in my opinion, he remains the home run king, because Hammerin' Hank Aaron was a right fielder who played 23 seasons in Major League Baseball from 54 through 76, widely regarded as one of the greatest baseball players in history. He spent 21 seasons with the Milwaukee/Atlanta Braves in the National League and two seasons with the Milwaukee Brewers in the American League. But his 755 career home runs broke that long-standing MLB record set by Babe Ruth, and it stood as the most for over 33 years. But the key for Hank Aaron, he didn't cheat to get it, so I keep him on top of my list. Hank Aaron still holds so many other MLB batting records, though. He hit 24 or more home runs every year from 55 through 73, and he is one of just two players to hit 30 or more home runs in a season at least 15 times. In 1999, the Sporting News ranked Hank Aaron fifth on their list of the 100 greatest baseball players ever. In 1982, he was inducted into the National Baseball Hall of Fame. That was his first year of eligibility. On February 5th, we lost one of the few fighters to actually beat Muhammad Ali. Leon Spinks won a split decision over Ali in 1978 in what is considered one of the biggest upsets in boxing history. Spinks won the light heavyweight gold medal at the 76 Summer Olympics in Montreal. He then beat Muhammad Ali in just his eighth professional fight. You know, Ali had expected an easy fight. I can coast to this. He showed up out of shape, and Leon Spinks made him pay for it. But this, unfortunately, would be the pinnacle of Spinks' career. Just 7 months later, Spinks was actually stripped of his world title by the WBC for refusing to defend it against Ken Norton. He had instead agreed to give a rematch to Ali, which Ali would win easily. Spinks would fight 46 times in his career. He was just 26, 17, and 3. But man, did he start off his career with a big, big bang, beating who so many people believe to be the greatest. We lost a very underrated NFL coach on February 8th when we lost Marty Schottenheimer. Marty served as head coach in the National Football League from 84 to 2006. He was the head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs for 10 seasons, the Cleveland Browns and the San Diego Chargers for 5 seasons, and the Washington Redskins for 1. 8th in career wins at 205, and 7th in regular season wins at 200, Marty Schottenheimer has the most wins of any NFL coach to not win a championship. But I mean, Marty-led teams were always really well coached. His players absolutely love that guy. I am convinced to this day that the Los Angeles Chargers franchise is battling a curse for firing Marty after the Chargers went 14-2. They're going to have to break that curse if they ever want to win anything of significance. Marty Schottenheimer won everywhere he went. Dude could just flat out coach. On February 28th, we lost a very good NFL player and a very impactful NFL broadcaster when Irv Cross passed away. After playing college football for the Northwestern Wildcats, Cross was selected by Philadelphia in the 7th round of the 1961 NFL draft. He played 6 of his 9 NFL seasons with the Eagles and was a 2-time Pro Bowl selection with Philly. Following his playing career, though, Cross was the first African-American sports analyst on national TV with CBS, where he worked from 1971 until 1994. He was an initial co-host of the NFL Today, which honestly, it became the pregame show standard for all television networks. People are still copying that standard today. And in 2009, the Pro Football Hall of Fame awarded him the Pete Rozelle Radio Television Award. Irv Cross became the first black announcer to win that award. On March 13th, we lost one of the greatest fighters in boxing history when Marvelous Marvin Hagler passed away. Hagler reigned as the undisputed champion of the middleweight division from 1980 until 1987. He made 12 successful title defenses, all but one of those by knockout. Hagler also holds the highest knockout percentage of all undisputed middleweight champions at 78%. Marvelous Marvin would put you to sleep. His undisputed middleweight championship reign of 6 years and 7 months is the second longest active reign of the last century. Nicknamed Marvelous and annoyed that network announcers often didn't refer to him as Marvelous, Marvin actually went and legally changed his name to Marvelous Marvin Hagler in 1982. Now, I will always remember Hagler as a fighter who never showed up to a fight unprepared. He trained like a machine and never showed up out of shape in any way. Hagler also had one of the toughest chins in boxing history. In 67 professional fights, Hagler was knocked down just once, and you can actually dispute that knockdown because it kind of looks like he got pushed, not actually knocked down. His 3-round fight against Tommy Hearns in 1985 might be the most action-packed fight in boxing history. And you can make a pretty strong case that Marvin Hagler beat Ray Leonard in 87, but Leonard was awarded a split decision. When Hagler had enough of boxing and he said, I'm sick of it, I don't like the dirty judges, I don't like how filthy this sport is, Marvin Hagler just packed up, moved to Italy, and he actually became an Italian movie star. He never stepped back in the ring again. Hey, if you're going to go out, not the worst way to go out like Marvin Hagler did. We lost a good one there. NBA superstar Elgin Baylor passed away on March 22nd. Baylor was a gifted shooter, a really strong rebounder, and an accomplished passer. He was best known for his trademark hanging jump shot. He was the number one pick in 1958 out of Seattle University. He was the NBA Rookie of the Year in 59. He was an 11-time NBA All-Star and a 10-time member of the All-NBA First Team. He is regarded as one of the game's all-time greatest players. You know, Baylor was a United States Army reservist, and he was actually called to active duty during the 61-62 season. He was stationed at Fort Lewis in Washington so he could still play for the Lakers when he was out on a weekend pass. Well, despite playing in only 48 games that year, he still managed to score over 1,800 points. Later that season, in a Game 5 NBA Finals victory against the Boston Celtics, Elgin Baylor grabbed 22 rebounds and set a still-standing NBA record for points in an NBA Finals game with 61. He actually averaged 40.6 points and 17.9 rebounds in that 7-game series loss to Boston. But Baylor also spent 22 years as general manager of the Los Angeles Clippers. He won the NBA Executive of the Year in 2006. We lost NFL and college football coach Hallen Schnellenberger on March 27th. Schnellenberger held head coaching positions with the NFL's Baltimore Colts and in college for the University of Miami, the University of Oklahoma, the University of Louisville, and Florida Atlantic. He won a national championship with Miami back in 1983. Schnellenberger also worked extensively as an assistant coach at the college and pro levels, including being a part of the staff of that 72 Miami Dolphins team. He is also famous for having recruited Joe Namath to Alabama for Bear Bryant back in the 60s. We lost one of the all-time great race car drivers on May 2nd when Bobby Unser passed away. Unser was one of just 10 drivers to have won the Indy 500 three or more times, and the first of two, followed by Rick Mears, to have won it in three different decades. Bobby Unser won the Indy 500 in 68, 75, and 81. Bobby had the fourth most IndyCar series wins at 35. That put him just behind his brother Al, AJ Foyt, and Mario Andretti. And Unser won the 68 and 74 USAC National Championships. He won the Pikes Peak International Hill Climb 10 different times, actually 13 times when class wins are included. But you know, my father actually raced with Bobby Unser, said he was one of the nicest guys he ever ran with. Lost a great race car driver in Bobby Unser this year. We lost a college football quarterback way, way too young on May 11th when we lost Colt Brennan. Colt played college football for the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors, where he was a two-time third-team All-American before being selected by the Washington Redskins in the NFL in the sixth round of the NFL draft. But with Hawaii back in 2006, Colt Brennan threw the second most passing touchdowns in a single season in Division I history. He still holds several NCAA Division I records. On May 19th, we lost Olympic sprinter Lee Evans. Evans won two gold medals in the 1968 Summer Olympics. He set world records in the 400 meter and the 4x400 meter relay, both of which stood for 20 and 24 years. Evans co-founded the Olympic Project for Human Rights and was part of the athletes' boycott and the Black Power movement. Lee Evans was an influential leader in regard to that Black Power movement. You know, the Olympic Project for Human Rights actually began with Black students protesting in order to have equal housing opportunities at universities. And it was kind of turned into the Black Power movement after a Tommy Smith interview. Well, we all know Tommy Smith and John Carlos were the face of that movement, but it was Tommy Smith and Lee Evans who were in fact the driving forces behind the movement. Evans wanted the world to understand the way he felt about some of the injustices he was seeing, but he did not want to take away from the winners. He didn't want to take away from the countries of the sports themselves. So the Black athletes of the 1968 Mexico City Olympics chose not to protest the Olympics as a whole. Instead, they chose to protest by wearing an article of Black clothing during every event in which they participated. Lee Evans was a big part of that movement. We lost NFL and college coach Jim Fossil back on June 7th. Fossil played quarterback at Fullerton College, the University of Southern California, and Long Beach State. He was actually drafted as quarterback in the 7th round by the Chicago Bears in the 72 NFL draft. He had a very short playing career with the Bears, with the San Diego Chargers, and with the Houston Oilers, and he also played a little bit in the World Football League for the Hawaiians. Later, he became an assistant coach with the Hawaiians, and he then began his college coaching career with stints at the University of Utah, Weber State, and Stanford University, where he worked with a quarterback by the name of John Elway. Fossil would eventually lead the New York Giants to the Super Bowl in the year 2000, but he also had stops as an assistant coach with the Arizona Cardinals, again with the Denver Broncos and John Elway, the New York Giants, the Baltimore Ravens, and the Oakland Raiders. Dickie Mogul passed away on July 4th, and if you don't know that name, Mogul was a professional football player who was a halfback for the San Francisco 49ers, Pittsburgh Steelers, and Dallas Cowboys, but he played college football at Rice University, where he was a consensus All-American in 54. Now, while at Rice, Dickie Mogul was involved in one of college football's most famous plays. With Rice leading 7-6, Mogul broke through the line on a sweep from Rice's own 5-yard line. He was running down the sideline in front of Alabama's bench on his way to what would be a sure touchdown. Unfortunately, a player sitting on the sideline got so upset, so fired up, Alabama's Tommy Lewis jumped onto the field, didn't even put on his helmet, and tackled Mogul. Well, seeing what happened, the referee, Cliff Shaw, just said, "Hey, I'm giving you the touchdown." He awarded Mogul a 95-yard touchdown play and Rice went on to win the game 28-6. Mogul, by the way, finished the game with 265 yards, which was a Cotton Bowl record until 2008. He was involved in one of the craziest plays we have ever seen in college football. Also on July 4th, we lost a very good college football coach. Terry Donahue served as the head coach at UCLA from 1976 to 1995. He compiled a record of 151, 74, and 8. And those 151 wins are the most in UCLA Bruins history. His 98 wins in the Pac-10, also the Pac-8 and the Pac-12, remain the most in the conference's history. Donahoe's Bruins won 5 Pac-10 titles. They appeared in 4 Rose Bowls. They won 3 of those. Donahue actually became the first head coach to win a bowl game in 7 straight seasons. Donahue played college football himself for UCLA as an undersized defensive tackle. He left coaching after the 1995 season. He became a college football color commentator. Terry Donahue was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame as a coach in 2000, but then he decided he had to get back into it. From 2001 to 2005, Terry Donahue was the general manager for the San Francisco 49ers in the NFL. We lost one of the greatest coaches in any sport of any time on August 8th when longtime college football coach Bobby Bowden passed away. Bowden got his start at Howard University, which is actually now Samford University. He then went to West Virginia, he had moderate success, but then he would eventually end up at Florida State. In his 44 seasons as a head coach, Bowden had 40 winning seasons, including 33 straight at Florida State. From 1987 through 2000, Bobby Bowden coached Florida State to 14 straight seasons with 10 or more wins. And his team also had a final ranking in the top 5 of the major polls. Bowden led Florida State to an Associated Press and Coaches Poll national title in 1993 and a BCS national championship in 1999, as well as 12 ACC conference championships once FSU joined the conference back in 1991. Bobby Bowden's Florida State Seminoles finished as an AP top 5 team for 14 straight seasons. Tony Esposito was one of the NHL's greatest and most impactful goalies ever. He actually passed away on August 10th. Esposito played 16 seasons in the NHL. 15 of those were with the Chicago Blackhawks. He was one of the pioneers of the now very popular butterfly style of goaltending. Tony, of course, was the younger brother of Phil Esposito, who played center, but both brothers had notable careers and both are enshrined in the Hockey Hall of Fame. Esposito's jersey number 35 was retired by the Blackhawks back in 1988, and in 2017, Tony Esposito was named one of the 100 greatest NHL players in league history. On September 2nd, at just the age of 47, former NFL wide receiver David Patton was involved in a motorcycle accident, and we lost him as well. Patton played his college ball at Western Carolina and initially got his start in the Arena Football League with the Albany Firebirds. He would eventually make it to the NFL, and he would play with the New York Giants, the Cleveland Browns, the New England Patriots, the Washington Redskins, and the New Orleans Saints. His most productive years were, of course, with the Patriots, and against the Indianapolis Colts in 2001, David Patton became the 8th player in NFL history to run, catch, and throw for a touchdown in a 38-17 win. He was named the AFC Offensive Player of the Week. We lost Sam Bam Cunningham on September 7th. Cunningham was a fullback in the National Football League for 10 seasons with the New England Patriots. He played his college football at USC, where he was named All-American and received MVP honors for the 73 Rose Bowl. Selected in the first round of the 1973 NFL draft by the Patriots, Sam Cunningham became the franchise's all-time leading rusher. Dude was a sledgehammer, hard-nosed kind of running back. He was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame in 2010. The same year, by the way, he was also inducted into the Patriots Hall of Fame. Okay, coming back, we still have a few more sports figures to remember, but then we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. Hey, 2021, it was not the greatest year. As you can see today, we lost a lot of really good people, but it was a little bit better than 2020. And yet, 2021, he'll still had some bad things about it. But as our Daily Dose Top 5 is going to show us today, make no mistake, 2021 could have been much, much worse. So let's finish up with those sports figures that we lost in 2021. And on October 13th, we lost another pretty good Denver Broncos running back. Otis Armstrong played for Purdue University. He became the school's all-time leading rusher and leader in all-purpose yards. Armstrong was selected to Purdue's all-time team in 1987 as part of a celebration of 100 years of football at Purdue. He was inducted into the Purdue Athletics Hall of Fame in 1997. Now, Armstrong was selected in the first round with the 9th overall pick in the 73 draft by the Denver Broncos, where he played his entire career from 73 until 1980. Armstrong finishes 8 NFL seasons with over 4,000 rushing yards, over 1,300 receiving yards, and nearly 900 yards on kickoff returns. He also scored 32 touchdowns. You know, it's kind of crazy because Otis Armstrong was the guy drafted to take over for Floyd Little. We lost both of them in the same year, just within a few months of each other. We lost another Pro Football Hall of Fame linebacker on November 13th when Sam Huff passed away. Huff actually grew up in a coal mining camp in West Virginia. He helped lead his high school to an undefeated championship season. He attended the University of West Virginia and then was drafted in the 3rd round of the 56th NFL draft by the New York Giants. But in training camp, head coach Jim Lee Howell was having a really hard time coming up with a position for Sam Huff. So Sam was like, I'm out of here. I'm not doing this. I'm going home. He went to the airport to fly back to West Virginia. But at the airport, he was stopped by the assistant offensive coach, a guy by the name of Vince Lombardi, who talked him into coming back to camp and said, I'll talk to the defensive coordinator for you. So they went back to camp. Vince Lombardi told the defensive coordinator, a guy by the name of Tom Landry, hey, come up with a way to use this guy more efficiently. Of course, Landry did, and Sam Huff became one of the greatest middle linebackers to ever play the game. Huff actually became the first NFL player to be featured on the cover of Time magazine back in 1959. Huff was a 5-time Pro Bowler. He won a championship with the Giants in 56, and he was named to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1982. Our next guy was undersized, but Curly Culp was one of the greatest nose tackles in NFL history. We lost him on November 27th. Culp played college football at Arizona State, where he was also an NCAA heavyweight wrestling champion. He was then drafted by the Denver Broncos in the 2nd round of the 68 NFL draft. But when he showed up in Denver, the idiots running the team said, you're too small to play defensive line. So he was traded to the Kansas City Chiefs, and he wreaked havoc on Denver for a number of seasons. Culp was so strong, he demanded you block him with 2 or 3 people. Well, you put him in a 3-4 scheme, he tore you up. Culp is regarded by many as the greatest 3-4 nose tackle in history. He played a total of 13 seasons in the AFL and NFL and was selected to a total of 6 All-Star games or Pro Bowls. We all remember Marcus Allen and Bo Jackson. They were 2 of the greatest running backs to ever play the game. But we lost a guy that definitely helped them be even better on November 20th when we lost former Los Angeles Raider and Seattle Seahawks fullback Steve Smith. Smith was a team captain on the Penn State Nittany Lions national championship team back in 1986. He was a 3rd-round draft choice of the Los Angeles Raiders in the 1987 NFL draft. He was a running back, but he actually switched to fullback, and he blocked for Raiders star running backs Bo Jackson and Marcus Allen. But he then spent 2 seasons. He also spent 2 seasons with Seattle until a back injury would end his career. Now, although we think of Steve Smith as a blocker, he also finished his career with over 1,600 rushing yards, 9 rushing touchdowns, and 13 receiving touchdowns. Smith was a tough dude that could do a little bit of everything. Widely considered to be the greatest player in Atlanta Falcons history, we lost Claude Humphrey on December 3rd. Drafted by the Falcons out of Tennessee State with the 3rd overall pick in 1968, Humphrey labored for 10 seasons with those awful Atlanta Falcons. And in that era, they were truly awful. But somehow, Claude Humphrey managed to earn first or second team All-NFL or All-Pro honors 8 times. And although it didn't become an official NFL statistic until after he retired, Claude Humphrey is credited on film with 130 career sacks. He actually finished his career with the Philadelphia Eagles from 79 to 1981. And in 1980, Claude Humphrey was a designated pass rusher. He recorded a team-high 14 and a half sacks for the Eagles and helped them become NFC champions and earn a spot in Super Bowl 15. Now, I know our next one is a horse, not a person, but on December 6th, we lost American thoroughbred racehorse Medina Spirit, who won the 2021 Kentucky Derby. He also came in second at the Breeders' Cup Classic and third at the 2021 Preakness Stakes. But that Kentucky Derby win was called into question. The horse tested positive for an anti-inflammatory, and trainer Bob Baffert swore up and down the horse didn't have any illegal substances in his history. Never had. But then in December, Medina Spirit collapsed and died at Santa Anita Park following just a 5-furlong workout. And the horse's preliminary cause of death was a heart attack. So I think it's fair to say Bob Baffert is just a big giant liar. He was 5 years younger than his brother, but we also lost Bobby Unser's brother, Al Unser, on December 9th. He was the second of four men, AJ Foyt, himself, Rick Mears, and Helio Castroneves, to have won the Indy 500 four different times. Al won it in 70, 71, 78, and 87. He was the fourth of five to have won the race in consecutive years. He also won the national championship in 1970, 83, and 85. You know, the Unser family has won the Indy 500 nine times. Three for Bobby, four for Al, and Al's sons Al Jr. also won it twice. Now, Al was not the personality that Bobby was, but he was so smooth, he just did not make mistakes. Al Unser has led the most laps of any driver in the history of the Indianapolis 500 at 644. It was also on December 9th that we lost Georgia Tech and Denver Bronco wide receiver Demaryius Thomas at the age of just 33. You know, he would have turned 34 on Christmas Day, but Demaryius Thomas was drafted by the Denver Broncos in the first round of the 2010 NFL Draft. He made four Pro Bowls. He won Super Bowl 50 against the Carolina Panthers, and he did also play briefly for the Houston Texans, the New England Patriots, and the New York Jets at the end of his career. Demaryius was just such a good guy in the community. He loved working with kids. It was a major passion of his, and Demaryius Thomas will be missed. We finish off our list today with Hall of Fame coach and broadcasting icon John Madden, who passed away yesterday morning, the NFL announced. He was 85 years of age. You know, Madden actually played briefly in the NFL. He was only 32 when then Raiders owner Al Davis hired him to be the Oakland Raiders head coach. That was back in 1969. John Madden coached the Raiders for 10 years. He led Oakland to a 103-32-7 regular season record. They did win a Super Bowl, winning Super Bowl 11 in 1977. You know, Oakland never had a losing record under John Madden. He won seven division titles. He made the playoffs eight times. But what's crazy about his career as a coach was so many people don't even realize he was a coach. Because once he left, he earned even more fame as an analyst on NFL telecasts, which he was so good at when he was teamed up with Pat Summerall. And then he also had the football video game that bears his name. All of the Madden games all came directly from that guy. You know, John Madden was enshrined into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2006, 28 years after coaching his final game, but it shouldn't have taken that long. This guy impacted the NFL in so many ways. John Madden did it all. John Madden was the NFL. Again, this is not a day of mourning necessarily, but more of a did you realize this person was gone and remembering some of the amazing accomplishments that some of these people had in the sports world. Now, as we do so many weeks here at the Daily Dose, we need to get to our Daily Dose top five. Hey, 2021 was a rough year at times, but it was a little better than 2020. We did start to see some returns to like normalcy in the world. But then, I mean, here at the end, people have started freaking out about COVID again. And as you saw from the podcast today, we lost some tremendous people in 2021. However, We have learned that in life, there are two ways that you can go through it. You can either complain about all the bad things, or you can realize things could always be much, much worse. And so it is in 2021. Yeah, 2021 was rough at times. But as our Daily Dose Top 5 is going to show you today, it could have been much, much worse. Let's start off at number 5. And I will be the first to admit, I am not the biggest Hollywood fan. And more specifically, Hollywood sports movies are really, really awful. They're always so corny. They always take what is an amazing story and they feel the need to make it like ridiculous. I mean, a kid can't just be taken in by a family and then become an NFL player. The mom has to teach him how to play football. A coach can't just take the smallest school ever to win a single class state basketball title in Indiana. There has to be some sort of cheesy forced love interest that makes your skin just crawl. And an unlikely small-time fighter, he can't just shock everyone by giving the heavyweight champion of the world all he wants in a big fight. He has to go further and avenge his friend's death and box like a Russian robot, just go off the edge of any sort of reality. Then, I guess he started raising his dead friend's kid, teaching him how to fight. Well, I don't want to watch any of that stuff. I'd rather watch documentaries about sports. I thought, originally, the Rocky movies were good when they started, but then they kind of went off the rails about 1983. So I am certainly glad that we did not get yet another Rocky movie in 2021, especially with all the streaming and all the video services that are out there. It would have been everywhere. No thanks. I'd rather watch the celebrity fights than that. And I don't watch any of those. So Rocky is, needless to say, pretty low on my priority list. But the fact that we didn't have another Rocky movie, yeah, that comes in today at number 5. We move next to number 4. And we know there are some weird things that have gone on in the world in these last couple of years. I mean, we all have COVID brains. Things are split politically. Everyone is angry and screaming and just lawless. Oh, and by the way, there might also be aliens. Did we mention that? Because after years and years, Washington is kind of admitting, hey, there might be some things we don't know about. There might be some aliens or something out there. We're not really sure. Now, a lot of people are going to look at that and say, well, that just proves the White House knows about aliens. I actually look at it and say, no, that just proves the White House doesn't want us to know that they have some things they're working on that would blow our minds. But imagine if actual aliens had surfaced in 21. That might have been worse. And imagine if when they had arrived, they went to Brooklyn and they picked up Kyrie Irving and then began bombing the planet. Yeah, that would have been way, way worse. I mean, we all kind of suspect Kyrie Irving is just planted here on Earth by another species. And then we would have had proof and it would be too late. Finding out Kyrie Irving is a spy for the aliens, that comes in today at number 4 on ways the year could have been much, much worse. We arrive at number 3. And even though we were all trying to be careful in 21, we were getting our boosters, we're wearing our masks, we did start to get back to having a social life a little in 2021. We started to see more family. We started to have more get-togethers. Just go out a little more in general. Sure, the virus still existed, but we were starting to come back more and more. We started to go out. Maybe go to a party. Maybe go to a movie. Maybe have a few drinks with friends or family. And then you don't want to drive home because, I mean, that's irresponsible. So we call for an Uber. We call for a Lyft. Come pick us up and take us home safely. And we get home, safe and sound. But in 2021, if you had called for your Uber or your Lyft, and your car shows up, and it's a 2021 Genesis GV80 SUV, and when you get in, you notice Tiger Woods is your driver, yeah, your 2021 might have gone way, way worse, because he is not the best guy behind the wheel. And that comes in at number 3. We are now at the number 2 way that for as tough as 2021 may have been, trust us, it could have been much, much worse. And we think back to the 2021 NBA season. The Milwaukee Bucks and the Phoenix Suns met in the NBA Finals and ratings again were pretty poor. And, you know, we have seen a steady decline of TV ratings for the NBA Finals. Going back to 2015, when the Golden State Warriors beat the Cleveland Cavaliers, the ratings were around 20 million fans per game. They rose slightly in 2016. They dropped a little in 17. They dropped a little in 18. But, I mean, they were still going strong. They were still at 17 million. A little drop, but still strong. But compare that to 2019, when the Toronto Raptors and Golden State Warriors only drew an average of 15 million. And then, the bottom really fell out. Because when the Los Angeles Lakers beat the Miami Heat in 2020 in the finals, the NBA Finals averaged just 7 million viewers per game. Well, this past finals featured the Bucks and the Suns. It went up to 9 million per game. But imagine if LeBron James and the Lakers had somehow made it to the finals this past year. The ratings might have been even worse.
Not 7, not 6, not 5.
Even worse than 2020. A small market team in Milwaukee playing a player and team that so many people hate. Yeah, we're probably pretty lucky the Lakers got knocked out in the first round of the NBA playoffs. And that comes in today at number 2. So we reached the number 1 entry on our list of ways that 2021 could have been far, far worse. And you know, we know in this world, celebrities have no conscience. I mean, they like to tell us how we should be living while simultaneously not doing any of the things they tell us to do. I mean, go watch an award show and listen to the Hollywood glitterati tell us, hey, you need to be recycling, you're killing the planet. Meanwhile, they just hopped off of a full-size private jet with just them and like 2 friends. And they were the only passengers on board. Well, we also know celebrities will hawk anything. Madonna promoted Pepsi. She's never drinking a Pepsi in her life. Justin Bieber sold nail polish. Make of that what you will. And Gwyneth Paltrow even currently sells a candle that smells like her vagina.
Oh, that was the grossest thing I've ever heard in my life.
I wish I were joking. Well, sports stars are just as bad. I mean, from O.J. Simpson doing commercials for Hertz, Kobe Bryant promoting McDonald's, George Foreman sold his grills. Sports personalities are always looking for ways to make some extra money. I mean, the whole name and likeness thing in college is built entirely around that. But what if in 2021 we had even worse examples? I mean, what if sports figures were trying to sell things like celebrities do? I mean, what if Sean Kemp was selling birth control? What if LeBron James was selling Brill Cream? It would just be weird. But imagine how much worse 2021 would have been if NFL quarterback Tom Brady was on your TV every day selling, well, his own vagina-scented candle. Hey, next week on The Dose, we will, of course, be bringing you our very first show of 2022. We will take a look at how those bowl games ended, and we will preview the national championship game. Plus, we will take a brief look back at 2021 and look forward to what we might expect this upcoming year. Hey, I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to The Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for subscribing wherever it is you watch or listen. Thank you for checking out the new articles over on DailyDoseSports.com. But most of all, thank you so much for sharing the podcast, for sharing the videos, for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. I have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week and have a very safe and a very happy new year.
Not 7, not 6, not 5.